when wars end, they sometimes have something called an armistice rather than a peace treaty. And I think this is an armistice. Hostilities really continue behind the scenes. Nobody's fighting. It could all break out again at any point. But for the moment, the advantage is certainly with Gordon Brown. He's prime minister. The aim of his rebels was to remove him from office this week, and they failed.
So what policies can he seek to implement now? What can he do now to shore up his support?
There's probably sort of two things he can do. One is to choose some areas of policy to talk about, to associate himself with very strongly, and perhaps to try and give an idea of what Labour might do if it was re-elected. So not necessarily to pass laws, but to describe the sort of territory he'd like to go to. And so that would be constitutional change, perhaps something on housing, maybe some of the bread and butter issues that almost appeal to traditional Labour voters who left the party, rather than some of the things on choice and public services New Labour's talked about more recently. And the other thing that could happen from the government is that ministers themselves, some of them are now more powerful than they were in the cabinet, and they could try and follow departmental agendas. They can push stuff themselves without almost asking the Prime Minister's permission. But of course, the difficulty is they haven't got very much time to do that before there has to be an election.
Now, if there is no Labour leadership change, what is likely to happen in May? What we assume the election will be then?
Yes, I mean, there's several things that could happen before May. We've got opinion polls in the next few weeks. There's one in the newspapers this week that suggests that Gordon Brown is about the least popular member of his party to be the leader. So we could certainly get a resumption of the hostilities, perhaps towards the autumn, and he might yet get pushed out if things are very bad for Labour. If he makes it through that period, makes it through the party conference, makes it through the by-elections that are coming, he probably will manage to stay in power for a year. Then he'll have to fight, and crucially, he'll have to fund a general election campaign against the Conservative Party, which will be very optimistic of succeeding.
All right. Let me ask you a question about David Cameron. Would he prefer a change in leadership, or do you think that he would be content to just keep fighting against Brown?
I think, like everybody else, the Tories have been pretty mystified by what's gone on inside Labour. They've been watching. They haven't really known whether Gordon Brown will be the leader or somebody else will be the leader. And, of course, they don't know how, if it had been Alan Johnson, and he's the name everybody talks about, David Miliband talked about him on the radio this week, they don't know how he would have gone down with the public. They do know Gordon Brown goes down badly. So I think, on balance, they're probably happy to have Gordon Brown looking unpopular, looking out of touch with his own cabinet, in disagreement with his chancellor, kind of hanging there for them to knock off at the general election.
What is the view of rank-and-file Labour MPs when they see the continuing chaos in their own party?
Well, political chaos is a strange thing, because people, often in politics and journalists too, say what's essential is unity. We mustn't have disagreement. This infighting is killing us. And I'm sure all Labour MPs would say that, and it's true. But of course, they're the people doing the infighting. So on the one hand, they're very much against the infighting. And on the other hand, they're the culprits. Nobody's forcing them to have the infighting. So they've been sort of sucked into this vortex of self-loathing, which is very public and very damaging to them. But it's a bit easy for them to say it should just stop, as though it's being imposed on them like the weather. They're the ones responsible for it.